It's Mike Shope.
Name any word in less than a second, I will tell you how many letters are in it. But I cannot do anything mechanically. I don't even know how to put a game together for three-year-olds.
And the Bulldog.
Fool me once, shame on you. If fool me, we can't get fooled again.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Three-year-olds. Jeez. I mean, my kids are teenagers. We're almost through it. It's almost over.
Tell me all about it.
Was that? I don't think I need to. Was that traumatic for you when you sort of like, my son will be a senior. His junior year will be done next week, if not this week. And did you have like all kinds of sort of issues with that in your mind, or sort of just, did you have any trouble coming to grips with that? Were you happy about it? Were you not? What am I in for here? I'm starting to think about it a lot.
Yeah. I don't know, man. There was so... Owen, 2 years older than his little brother, graduated summer of 20, spring of 20. So COVID already was like, you know, that already had wiped out the back end of the school year and a bunch of hockey stuff that we were expecting and looking forward to. So I don't really remember having time with him to consider the weight of like, okay, my oldest is graduating high school. What does this mean to me? There was so much hockey stuff going on as he finished school. Like it was right into like the NAHL draft and he's going to New Mexico. And like, it was kind of one thing after the other.
That makes sense.
And even that summer was, you know, it was focused on hockey future, not so much the high school, the Nichols, like that was intentional. We thought that would help him with college hockey eventually. And I think it would have, if he'd have, you know, finished off juniors and gone to college, but he just stopped playing too soon to get any of the benefit of that. So I don't know. It was like in a way the sports continuing at the level that they did made it feel like high school really hadn't stopped for him, I guess, because there was a bridge to college that we were on that, you know, when the bridge gave out, that was the end of that. So it never really felt like a big thing. In part because, you know, the ceremony, you know, I don't know what it would have been like. Maybe you can tell me in a few years if you know, when your daughter gets there. You know, I stood on Amherst Street outside the gates of the school with some other parents wearing masks, watching, you know, the kids get introduced one by one. And it, like, that was it. There was no, you know. Yeah. And there wasn't even much of a party, whatever. And then Leo, 2 years later, was, you know, he finished school largely at home. Started going back by the time he graduated. I don't know. It feels more real now that they're 24 and 22. And
you know, you can't get rid of them.
And Owen working here is the thing.
Yeah, they didn't leave.
That really got me. Like that's what hit me when, you know, we never really talked about it on the air much, but like the thing the Sabres did before game one of the playoffs that featured your son and my son at a game from 2009, I think it was, or 2011. He was nine, Owen.
So, back when I couldn't put a game together
right,
for my kids.
Back then, right.
Back whenever that was said.
And like when I was smashed in the face with that picture as I was in that video shoot, my first thought was the kid has a mustache and works at the station now. Like
he's been married twice. Why not just start with that? Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
So
a lot of time has gone by.
I don't
by.
Know what to tell you. Like it might have hit me different if not for all those other circumstances that I think impacted it.
Well, I won't root for another pandemic, but if there is one,
yeah, right. Yeah, don't.
I can. Prepare for that happening again.
But it is, yeah, I mean, just at some point you'll be clear of all the stuff, the running around, the one's got this practice there and the other one's got, and you're in it double with both your kids playing high-level sports. I only had the one. You don't really know what to do with your time after a while.
I'm not excited about that. I'm dreading that a little bit.
I hear you. Like, I have still not.
The rest of this conversation has to wait because I have some serious questions about what it'll be like.
Yeah. It's you know, it's how you end up at a bar from 1 to 3 a lot of Saturdays because you got nothing else to do.
I've got a van picked out on eBay, and I've got a spot by the river. If it comes to that,
right.
I know exactly where I'll put the van down by the river, and maybe I'll go into motivational speaking. You know, it's still too soon to say. Yesterday, by the end of it, we got a couple of interesting phone calls about Alex Tuck. I like how this has played out so far, where we've sort of, it's almost been like a sparring match or something. Not that it's combative, but what do you think? What do I think? What should the Sabres do? What would I do? This kind of back and forth. And after I was done making fun of the drug ads for the 70th time, and it's not going to be the last time, by the way, so.
We're counting on you.
Brace yourself.
Yeah.
You said, I just feel like maybe I need to plant a flag on this. They should sign Alex Tuck. And you've talked about their organizational history and reputation, whether that's relevant. We talked to Luke Fox about that yesterday. That's an interesting piece of it. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
That would be something, I think, not so much for the fans necessarily, but for the players to be asked about. You know, if I'm Yarmo, I might want to, assuming he even himself has a finger on that. He doesn't have to know that much about their history. I mean, he's a hockey guy, so he probably does. But I'm not sure how much he thought about or cared about the quest for a first cup and just how sad it got most of the last 15 years. So you have that part of it, and you said eventually, like, do it. The cap's going up, do it. But then you said, like, but here's what I would say back to me.
Yeah, I didn't mean and to I, do your job for you.
No, but, I like that. What was that? Remember what that was?
Where do all the kids go?
What do I do with the rest
of
the forwards?
Do I have room for everyone?
Right.
That I, you know, Kulik is back. We were pretty high on Hellenius for good reason. To me, Åslund's at the top of the list to me. Like, he's absolutely got a spot next year.
Okay. So
what do I do?
Right. You have the rest. You have those questions, and those are good questions. I found myself not only feeling like I'm on the other side of this, like if I need to plant a flag, I think I want to plant it in the other side of that fence. But then I know what I would want to ask me. And one caller came on and said, listen, are we just doing this because he didn't score a point in the Montreal series? What if he had, he didn't say this, but I was thinking it again today. Like, what if he had three? Would anybody even know? Do we know how many points they all had in that series? I mean, I don't. I know that Tuck had none.
Right.
And I was even tracking it because I had that Sabres-Canadians playoff history spreadsheet. I think Darlene might have had 10.
Okay.
Maybe Thompson had 8. So I guess I know a couple. Only because of that.
Right, right.
Because it wasn't like both of those guys were dominant.
Right,
well,
yeah.
Scoring-wise, Darlene was great.
Yeah, it's not like every game, like, oh, look at this historic run this guy's on,
right,
or something like that. It was never
it's
like
that. It's not Marner, or it's not one of these. So then I thought, well, I know what I would ask me. I'd ask me that question. And, you know, the bigger question isn't how you came to decide that you would let him walk, if that's what you decide. But just the matter of his scoring 33 goals on a team that won its division for the first time in 16 years. And so, like, you're just going to do nothing about that? What are you going to do about that? I like the point that, and this is easy to say, but if I've got a top-rate GM, maybe they do. Have they ever had one? Maybe they do. If they do, then he should, I think, you know, 31 other teams, he should be able to come up with something else that would allow for them to live past Alex Tuck.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're not, I mean, the worst case is going to happen almost inevitably. You just don't know when, with a contract like he would probably get. Can I find somebody who's 5 years younger that, if I put him in the right role, you know, whatever that means,
mm-hmm,
I know they change lines all the time, but somebody that sort of checks the boxes for me, shouldn't I be able to do that and survive? Partly or largely because I have those other players. And this was what we talked about maybe at this exact time yesterday to start the day. It's like, all right, well, let me know what we're going to define kids as, because
mm-hmm,
I've got, you know, young players,
right,
but They're all pretty good, and they've already kind of shown that. So I don't want to talk about Hellenius and Osland like they haven't made the league yet. Like maybe we did with Kulik and Roseanne a little bit, just sort of wish casting with those guys,
yeah.
because the Sabres were kind of nowhere. Like, well, at least they have this group of these three first-round picks the 1 year, Savoy, you know, Benson eventually. Like, at least that's going to come eventually, and then it does or it doesn't. You don't know that. These are players who, even in playoff tests, not Kulik, but the other two guys, Benson quintessentially, I mean, absolutely rose to the occasion. I would say all of them did in this playoffs.
Yeah, in some way, yeah, they did. It's still... might be, like, maybe the one I'm the most uneasy about is the one who's the flashiest, and that, well, Kulik is in a separate category because he didn't taste the playoffs at all and missed, you know, almost the entire season. But he was tracking, I think last year I would have had him as the second line center on this team going into the year behind Norris. So there was a projection there off of how he finished the season prior that, like, okay, he's coming hard. And he's a player you can count on in your top six. Hellenius, to me, is the one that I think looks like he has the highest ceiling, but he's also the one who's played the least. And so, I don't know, I might want to sort of settle for, you got to break the door down. And I don't know if playing four, how many playoff games did he play? Five? Six? Did he play the whole Montreal series? I don't even remember what he played. But, I mean, he got in, he looked good. There's no question about that. But is that breaking the door down? Like, I'm not quite sure that is. I know he had a really good year in Rochester.
Hmm. He might have played three.
So I'm just worried, you know, it's a little bit kind of the opposite of the tuck point here, like sample size, right? We're you know, it's the same point about sample size. It's a small sample. Do you want to react? How do you want to react to that? Maybe the best thing to do is not react to it at all because it's so small, right? I'm going to ding Tuck. I'm going to decide I don't want him as a cornerstone of my franchise because he didn't have a good seven-game series. And at the same time, Hellenius, oh, he's got a spot because he looked good in three games?
Yeah, it was four games. You're right.
I got,
he scored today.
I know.
You want that?
I saw.
Can I use that? Can I have that?
Sure. And look, none of this is to say that that can't work. I just, yeah, this is, it's all just pretty familiar that you're on the cusp here. You're not even on the cusp. This is a big part of the platform is you're a cup contender. You're not trying to become one. You're not hoping to be one. You became one already. That happened. The caterpillar turned into a butterfly. Like you're there. Now you've got to extend that shelf life. And Tuck is a central piece to that. And what you do if you don't want to meet the price or you can't meet the price or he doesn't want to, you know, get reasonable enough for you to feel palatable about the whole, whatever. It's not all in your hands, which you've pointed out numerous times to me yesterday. Like, Tuck has a big say in this. So, you know, if he just wants the contract and wants to move on to somewhere else, that's his right, and there's very little the Sabres can do about that.
That's right.
So
we just don't know.
We just don't know is right also. But is there a pivot? That's what I need to know. Like, you've got to have something else in hand, to me, veteran-wise, to make sure you're insulated so that if one of the kids just isn't going to be there for you for whatever reason – they're not ready. You're just too young. If you put all those guys in, and you extract Tuck, I'm just not sure you've made yourself better.
But who's not ready from that group? Who would you say that about? Kulik is his own case because of his health, but we did get a pretty good taste of him 2 years ago.
I think any of those guys could play here next year. They're ready, I think, physically to play here, but at what level? Like, am I going to get top line production from one of them if they're in Tuck's spot? Or am I going to get some kind of a learning curve that, you know, is a ramp up to what eventually the ceiling is? I mean, and I don't know the answer to that. All I know is I don't want to just bank on these kids all maxing out or close to it in year one, their first full year. Like, okay, we're a Stanley Cup contender. You're 21. Go score me 30 goals. I know that's a lot to ask.
I think we have maybe, if this isn't to stretch it, at least three bad signs for the re-sign Alex Tuch crowd. One and two are how both Tuch and Kekalainen sounded, what they said after the season.
Mm-hmm.
Tuch was pretty matter of fact. We'll have to talk. You know, he was not. I mean, it was there was a requisite. Yes, they said they want me here. You know, whatever else. I enjoyed it.
I got to do what's best for my family.
But yeah, like it ended that. He wasn't effusive about just like how special staying would be, and that's to be expected. Like it's a business decision. And Kekalainen said a thing about just like whatever. It was a little almost cold. It was after talking him up, say, but we have to make sure we do what's best for the team.
Right.
Words to that effect.
The contract has to allow us to improve. Something like that. And yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, I think a lot of us, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say the third thing is like the reports of the last couple of days are just like maybe, you know, they alienated him or just like the writing on the wall from like in the second half of the season when it was on the table wasn't really promising. So you have that too. And who said, by the way, if I can get squeeze four in, who said, was it you maybe, that said like how they might have been trying to replace his money for the playoffs by whether that was going to be Thomas or Parayko or somebody like that.
Yeah.
So that might have even also been an indication that they were planning to
preparing
be without
for
him.
A life without him. Yeah, like certainly not at the trade deadline, but in the future. Yeah, exactly.
Postseason.
Right. That, I think, would be the impetus. That's why I've said, like, if you want to, you just can't get there. His number is just not going to work for you, and he won't come down and whatever. It's muddied up. If you want to, like, tell me you're trading for Robert Thomas, okay. Like, that's a real move to me. Like a provably good addition, maybe even great addition to your roster. And it isn't just counting on guys who have not done it yet in the league, which is really what it is. I can stop just saying kids, but it's just, you know, what have they really done? So it's also speculative. So I would want to insulate myself with something. And if you can do that, then, you know, I can look at Tuch and go, okay, well, this is a contendery move. You're switching out. I've made the example. It's not great because Tampa had won cups, but that we're not keeping Steven Stamkos anymore. We're just going to get Jake Guentzel in his spot, who's basically what you just described, younger, and is going to replace the production almost note for note. He's not going to wear the C for us because he's not a franchise cornerstone, but whatever. We're just going to do that instead because we think that's a better way to spend our money. Okay, you got to do that. But I can get with that. It's just the only thing I don't want to end up as is just assuming I need to make room for all these kids because of what I saw in a handful of games. I don't think that's good process.
Robert Thomas led the league in shooting percentage this year, by the way, but he's played 8 years and he's been a proven producer. Why are the Blues going to want to trade him or Kyrou or anybody else? Like the season ended. Are they just, he's 20, going to be 27, this Thomas. Like, are they so far gone roster-wise that they would just need to, is that like Eichel or somebody
that's a good question. How quickly, like, there are other guys there that they might feel like they can build around, the guys they got from Edmonton on the offer sheets, and I think Snuggerud is someone, like, they might feel like they've got a new young core that is a couple of years away, and if they can clean up on a Thomas deal and get, like, you know, one of the guys here, you know, Osland, Helenius, Quinn, somebody, not Benson. Like, to me, Benson is no touch. And say Mertka and a pick. Well, I've turned that into three assets And I am sort of starting over, so a guy in his prime with an $8 million contract maybe doesn't make the most sense, especially if I can parlay it into three pieces that are more on the timeline of the other, the new young core I'm building. That would be, to me, St. Louis's motivation, and it would be the same with Kyrou. Like, his name has come up now. What I'm reading from all the insiders is they're making their trade lists here because we're at that time of the year. Is that like Thomas was more, people were calling the Blues about Thomas more than they were shopping him. And that Kyrou may be a player, a winger as opposed to a center, they're more willing to move in the offseason. Same motivation, been a good player, and but timeline wise, does it make sense for us to have, you know, 26, 27 year old guys on big deals if we're not going to be contending for a couple years? So maybe he's a target, and to me he fits as a Tuck replacement even more directly than Thomas. Thomas to me solves a problem if I get a way to offload Norris, because it's a new number one center, which is really what Norris is on this team if Thompson stays on the wing, and I'm leery of trusting that too. So I like that idea, but if you traded for Kyrou, the cost will be less as far as assets given out to acquire the player. He's probably a plug-and-play replacement for Tuck, at least on the line he's on. I don't know about penalty killing and all that other stuff.
Well, if I were to guess what the fans want, it would be sign him. It's not my money. He was good. We love him. We had a caller who brought that up yesterday, all the jerseys in the crowd and everything like that. And that probably stems from the beatings that Sabres fans have taken over the years on guys that have left and you're stuck with the jersey, or not even the jersey, but just like it's so many losses versus so few wins in terms of top players, popular players coming versus going. And I don't begrudge that. I just don't know that I want to prioritize it for this, because I think a bad contract is a bad contract, even if you have never won the Stanley Cup, or even if, you know, he was popular. Like, that's why I ended up against it. But I'm open to being persuaded. I think a lot of fans are probably, you know, keyed up over what the Sabres have turned into and wouldn't want to mess with it, and could see Tuck as a particular way of continuing things on and feeling like maybe times are different. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a really good discussion, which is why I was eager to have it like a second day in a row.
It is very, very hard. I if this hasn't been made clear, I'm not sure if it came up directly from me yesterday, but the past is a big part of the thinking, and I freely admit that is also not good process, but I just don't think I want to sit here with the team in a clear contending window, letting one of their most important guys walk.
No, sure.
Right? Like, I just don't want to, you know.
It's not that they've let everybody go. Skinner was brought up yesterday by our guest.
And
I think when you bring Skinner's name up, you're saying, like, I don't think I would sign this player. Because, like, look how that went. So that's an example. I mean, there's so much to say. A lot of this was brought up yesterday, too, that they signed certain young players, and not all of them did it look like a home run. And then it kind of did eventually, you know, thinking of Samuelson and certain others. Yeah. So it's not that they've let everybody walk. They're not the Rays.
No, they have not. No, but what they did do is proactively, this is to their credit, they got those guys on deals, and they've hit on enough of them that they're considered. Is it okay to say a $7 million contract's a bargain? Like, you're getting good value off of those contracts. Now is really the first time. The Dahlin extension, the most recent extension, is an example. That's a market rate extension. Like, if he had stayed on $7 or $8 million a year, you'd be a bargain. But he's where he belongs. But mostly, this is the first time you've had to pay market rate. And to punt on that is just a certain, the optics of it, I don't think are great.
803-0550, how much do the optics matter What would you do? Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Will Graves from the AP in Pittsburgh joins us later. Also, Paul Hamilton on the Sabres and the events of the playoffs. Carolina wins again. We'll talk about that, of course, with Paul later in the show. Lines are open for your calls next. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.
I think there has to be a limit. I heard him say that he wants to play till he's 40 years old. It's not like he's a one-trick pony. His defensive capabilities as a forward are very strong. But I think you get into tricky territory when you're probably paying top dollar for the back half of someone's career. That could bite you down the road. So it's not going to be an easy one, I don't think, for the player or for Kekalainen, this negotiation. But I think you have to set a limit. And I don't know if I'd go 8 figures on an AAV. I might do 9 point something. Can't overextend yourself.
Luke Fox of Sportsnet on with us yesterday. I hear all that. I said to him right after he was done talking that I'm largely in the same boat. You could also be like, what's $2 million a year with the cap going up? Are we really going to decide this?
Right.
So back and forth we go.
You want to go to 9.5, but you won't go to 10.5. What are we doing here exactly? There's also...
Make another hot dog of the day available.
Right. There's also the 7 versus 8 part of this. Like the Sabres, the way the CBA works, have the luxury of offering an 8th year. So, just some loose math. Like if somebody out there, Seattle, say, I've seen him attached to Seattle. His wife is from Vancouver or the Vancouver area. So maybe that makes sense. They want to give him, the most they can do is 7 years. They want to do 7 for 11. Okay, that's $77 million. The Sabres can go 8 for 10 and exceed that. They can go 8 for 9.5 and get, I don't know, what is that close even? Like so the difference becomes so marginal because of that 8th year. If the player and the agent are hung up on the AAV because, I don't know, the pressure from the Players Association or something, then maybe that pushes you that way. But you can get closer on the money because of that 8th year here. That's one benefit. I mean, that's why it's, I think, largely there, is to give the team that has the player currently the opportunity to keep him at a more reasonable cap figure but still satisfy the whole sum of money, which is all guaranteed.
If you want to weigh in, 803-0550, wouldn't you want to have other people know how you feel about this? That's the way to do it. In the meantime, do you want some interesting NFL schedule nuggets? Are you in the mood for nuggets?
I'm always here for interesting NFL schedule nuggets.
NFL Nerd, my site for tracking the schedule, all the different rumors and such. Sales pointed out how, and others have pointed out, the Bills are playing all their NFC games at night. Not even just the 4 against the NFC North, Chicago, Detroit, Green Bay, and Minnesota, but also the Rams game, the additional game, all 5 of their games against the NFC are night games. That has never happened. It's never even been 4 where a team has played 4 out-of-conference games in prime time. Now, there are more primetime games all the time, so always you want to adjust for that.
Right.
But it's true that the Bills are playing, well, scheduled to play all 5 of their NFC games at night and none of their AFC East games, and playing as many as 4, in this case 5, games against the other conference in primetime is an NFL first. The Ravens are here week 8.
Okay.
That's their first game against a team that finished last year above 500. Their first 7 games.
Baltimore's first game.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
the Ravens' first right. 7 games. I mean, the Bills are only playing good teams, it seems.
Right.
That's right. And the Dolphins and the Jets.
Right.
The Ravens' first 7 games are all against teams that had losing records last year. Nobody finishes 500 anymore. So you're never 500. You're going to be above or below unless you had a tie. Only twice since 1983 has a team started with as many as 7 games in a row against teams that had been losers the year before. Baltimore is the 3rd. One more would be...
There was only Pittsburgh had a winning record in that division, right? The Bengals.
Yes.
Right. So that, I mean, that helps a lot. I don't know if they're playing them early.
No, they play them twice late.
Okay.
15 and 18 are their Pittsburgh games.
And if the other teams in the division are in that first seven, they qualify as under 500, obviously.
And they both are.
Yeah.
Okay. Indianapolis, New Orleans, Dallas, Tennessee, Atlanta, Cleveland, Cincinnati are their first seven games. And that Dallas game, as we were talking about earlier in the day, is not a night game or even a morning game. That's the game in Rio. Week three, it's the Ravens and Cowboys from Brazil. And that'll be a 4:25 Sunday game, which makes me wonder if there will be any other 4:25 games.
Right.
International games
like
in
to
that
make
slot.
That like a standalone. Yeah, right.
One more quickly is that the Packers and Seahawks are both scheduled to host five night games. Host.
Wow.
And one of Green Bay's is against the Bills on Christmas, right?
No, that's not Christmas.
No, that's not Christmas.
No.
It's around Christmas, but it's not Denver's Christmas.
It is the week. It's 2 weeks before. It's the 13th. It's week 14.
Green Bay and Seattle each have five night games at home. And the only other team that has done that is the 08 Chargers, which had a flex. So it wasn't even scheduled. So this is like a record, too. Five home night games. The Bills have
three.
Detroit, Kansas City.
Chicago.
And none of which is a Sunday night.
Right.
Chicago's a Saturday.
Saturday night, yeah.
So, a few little nuggets there. Let's go to Joe here. Hi, Joe.
How are you?
Good, Joe. Thanks for calling us.
Good. You know, why can't we pay Tuck? We can't pay Tuck because we're still paying Skinner. You know, there's $6 million that is still owed to Skinner this coming season, and that's why we can't pay Tuck. That's the thing that scares me about paying Alex Tuck and giving him an 8-year contract. I mean, we don't know if somebody's going to offer sheet Benson. I mean, in some of these other players, I mean, you want to sign Benson. I mean, I wouldn't say he's one of these other people that, you know, Bulldog, that you're saying that they're not proven, and I'd rather sign somebody that's proven, you know, where I just think I'm hoping that Yarmo can find a way to, you know, trade Josh Norris and get $7 million,
yeah,
you know,
me
our
too.
Highest paid forward.
Me too.
Who doesn't play like our highest paid forward. I mean, so there's just so many things that play into it, and the whole thing is just back, you know, years ago when we talk about Breer and Drury, I mean, they weren't spending up to the cap. And it's like Galassano just wasn't paying the money. You know, he had to make money on the team. And it's just a whole different situation now because, you know, hopefully now Terry is going to pay to the cap. They haven't been doing that. And they're just in a really tough situation because the cap is where it is. And even though it's going to go up, you know, even if it were next year at this time when that $6 million figure came off, you'd be in a different place. So I just hope that Yarmo can come up with a way to come up with the money to kind of keep everybody happy and sign the kids as well. But the whole thing is the length of the deal. You know, 8 years when somebody's 30, you know, if the last 3 years you're paying somebody $10 million a year when they're not playing anywhere near, you know, where they were, and yet he was a leader, just, you know, and I just think the same thing where, you know, Benson, if I were another team, I'd offer sheet him. I mean, God, who doesn't want him? You know, but you got to find a way to pay him. And I don't think he's going to want to take a bridge.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah. Benson is, just to be clear, like to me, even though I'm saying kids, like he's in a separate, I even made sure to differentiate when talking about trade pieces. Like he's over there. Like that's not, you're not, you are signing him to something this offseason. That's the second or third time the offer sheet thing has come up. And I guess it should be, I mean, you got to go back a long time to for the scar tissue that I'm even referring to. It's Drury and Breer. And that same summer, they did get offer sheeted on Vanek when they appeared to be vulnerable. So if they appear vulnerable, maybe some team will want to come after Benson. I just think it's going to take an outrageous offer to not get matched. And like, what are you really accomplishing? You know, which, again, it doesn't mean somebody can't do it and push his figure up, you know, ridiculously high. I just think it's a little soon. Like, you're talking about him like he's like the rookie of the year and he scored 80 points or something. He's not Macklin Celebrini. He had 43 points. He's a nice little dirtball player. I love him. I want to be on this team for as long as I'm alive, okay? But, like, he's not somebody's not coming in with $12 million a year for him. I mean, it's just not. That would be insane.
You don't quite want Benson on a lifetime contract. You want him on a your lifetime contract.
Right, right. That might work out pretty well that for might. Everyone. I mean, I
just, hate to speculate.
I don't want to.
We don't want to put numbers on
what's
that.
What's the max? 8 years? Oh, geez.
You've got that.
I really sign up for that. So, look, I hear you. And of course, the thing you're trying to avoid is, yeah, a repeat of, you know, oh, this guy fell off a cliff and I've still got 4 years of this left. I think right now you'd have to sign him. If you were to sign him 8 years, $80 million, I think you would go into that with your eye. You'd be irresponsible if your eyes weren't wide open to the idea that you're hoping for 4 good years. Give me 4 good years and then I'll just, right? Yeah, I'll figure it out. Like the Sabres managed to have this incredible season with $6 million on their cap this year. For Jeff Skinner, who didn't play a single minute for them. So like, you can find a way around it. You can also, you know, do what Vegas does and just, Alex, he's hurt.
He's hurt all year.
He's hurt. Long-term IR. Like, there's just, to me, that's not enough of a deterrent, a contract that went bad. But the reality is, you're not getting 8 peak years. And you just have to decide whether that equation works for you or not.
Let's get to Randy here. Hi, Randy.
Hey, gentlemen, Bulldog, I got to say first, I also work midnights, and there's not a more terrifying sound than hearing a lawnmower at 10 a.m. So if your wife is able to sleep through that, God bless her. That is a superpower. That's awesome. But, guys, I did want to weigh in on this whole Alex Tuch situation. I will admit I'm a bandwagon fan. I haven't watched hockey in 15 years, but this kind of reminds me of 2007, and correct me if I'm remembering it wrong, but I remember at the end of the 07 season, they were definitely going to lose Jury or Briere. It was going to be one of the two. And then when they come to find out we lose both of them, I think it kind of changed the landscape of the franchise, at least, you know, from a fan base perspective. We were all, you know, we were pretty upset about the whole situation. And given how much success they had with Tuch this year, I don't know, it would be real sad to see him leave. So, I don't know. Hopefully if you think there's a way they can keep him, I'd love to hear it.
Okay, there is. That's been talked about. If he has a number he would sign for, then you offer him that.
Right.
Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, back after this timeout here on WGR.